Greetings and welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church on Kirkpatrick Road in Burlington, North Carolina. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. If you'd like to correspond with Pastor Barkman and the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. The Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201. Now with today's message from God's Word, here is Pastor Greg Barkman.
Well, it's wonderful that the Lord has allowed us to gather together around this radio microphone on Friday, December 23, which I don't need to tell you is the day before Christmas Eve, which is, of course, the day before Christmas Day. And for most of God's people, it is a day to remember the incarnation of Jesus Christ. Not that we forget that the rest of the year, but a day to especially celebrate the birth of Christ, the incarnation of Christ. There are some of God's dear people who believe that it's wrong to have a special day, a non-biblical day, a day that is not given to us in the Bible, upon which to remember and celebrate the birth of Christ. And I certainly do respect those opinions. And in our own church, we try to take somewhat of a middle ground. It's not that we're trying to please everybody, but we feel like there is some value in having a time when the entire world is reminded of the birth of Christ, even though it's evident that the world is more and more trying to take Christ out of Christmas. It's impossible to completely take Christ out of Christmas. You might do it to a significant degree, but you'll never do it totally, because at some point you're always going to have to come back to the question, why do we celebrate this? What's the purpose of this holiday? Every holiday has a reason, and the reason is there to remind us of what it was that caused this celebration to occur in the first place. So if we have an Easter holiday, then we have to think about the reason for that. It may be relegated to the annals of myth, as it will be by many people. Easter is the time when Christians believe that Jesus rose from the dead, and report it in such a way that it's clear that I don't believe that, that many people don't believe that, but Christians believe that, or some Christians believe that, as they might say. Well, even that is a testimony, isn't it? You can't really go through the Easter season without some reminder of the account, the historical account that has passed down through two millennium now of the resurrection of Christ from the dead. And of course, you will have to decide whether you believe it or not. And if it is true, as I'm convinced that it is, and if you choose not to believe it, you will stand before the resurrected Christ someday and give an account for your unbelief. And likewise with Christmas, the birth of Christ. Even though that is more and more relegated to just an annual holiday, a family day, a year-end celebration, a time for merriment and parties and family gatherings, it's impossible to completely extract, even from the public view, the fact that Christmas is on the calendar because Christians have for centuries celebrated the birth of Christ at this time of year. So I say at our church we take a bit of a middle ground. In other words, we don't make the Christmas season the most important season of the year. We don't make it the focal point of the year. We don't do a lot of extra things. We certainly don't put up a Christmas tree and in the church and all of this, because for us, every Sunday, every Lord's Day is a day to worship Christ, the incarnate Christ, and the crucified Christ, and the risen Christ. And consequently, we don't focus upon it overly, but we do enjoy some of the wonderful Christmas music, that celebrates the incarnation of Christ, which I think is some of the most beautiful and uplifting music that has ever been written, and I'm glad that we can sing those Christmas carols at this time of year. We could sing them other times and occasionally do. It seems a little bit strange when you pull out a traditional Christmas carol and sing it in May or June or July or August, but we do that occasionally, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. But for the most part, we reserve these songs, as most people do, for this particular time of year. We do try to encourage people to put the emphasis upon the celebration of Christmas, primarily upon family gatherings, and to celebrate it in your family the way that you believe is honoring to the Lord. But we will make some minor adjustments in recognition of the fact that this is an important time of year and a wonderful time for families. It is the biggest holiday of the year. Like it or not, I happen to like it. But you can't ignore that it really is the biggest holiday of the year. It is the one that is most widely celebrated. It is the one where more families get together. It is the one where more businesses close. Have you noticed that? That even though we do see some businesses open on Christmas Day, there are many businesses that will be open 364 days a year and will close down one day only. And if a business only closes down one day of the year, what day will that day be? I think it is always Christmas Day. Maybe there's an exception to that somewhere, but that has been my observation. And we think there's value in that, so we encourage people to take some time to get together and for Christian families to make that a time to celebrate the reason for the season, the coming of Jesus Christ. And to do that in your families as much as anywhere. And therefore, on this particular Christmas, which falls on a Sunday, as it does every 7 years, we have reduced our normal Sunday schedule, but have not canceled all Sunday services, as some churches perhaps do. But we are having our morning worship service at 11 o'clock, but we have canceled Sunday school and evening worship to encourage people to both enjoy their family gatherings and a time of public worship on the day that we set aside to celebrate the birthday of Jesus Christ. What a shame to have a day that we call the birthday of Jesus Christ, and if that day falls on the Lord's Day, we decide that personal plans and family celebrations are more important than our obedience to not forsake the assembling of ourselves together on the first day of the week, as the Bible instructs us to do. That would seem to me to be a strange way to honor the Lord. And so we will have an 11 o'clock worship service, and we would invite those radio listeners who are within driving distance, who do not have a church service this Lord's Day, to come and to join us at that time. But we return now to Romans chapter 7, and we're talking about the purpose of the law. And the purpose of the law, number one, is to define sin, verse 7, and number two, to provoke sin, verse 8. And that's a surprising one, but it appears in the writings of Paul, inspired by the Spirit of God, several times. And here it is in Romans 7, verse 8. He says, "But sin taking opportunity by the commandment produced in me all manner of evil desire. For apart from the law, sin was dead." Now, what is Paul saying here about the law? Well, he's telling us that sin has an accomplice in the law, in the commandments. Back to verse 7, what shall we say then? Is the law sin? No, certainly not. On the contrary, I would not have known sin except through the law, for I would not have known covetousness except the law had said, "You shall not covet," but sin, taking opportunity by the commandment, the commandment, "Thou shalt not covet," perhaps others as well, but certainly that one that he's mentioned. "Sin taking opportunity by the commandment produced in me all manner of evil desire, for apart from the law, sin was dead. Now, that's interesting. What Paul is telling us is that the law gave sin a beachhead, headquarters, a center of operation in my soul. Sin brought strong, or the law stirred up sin's strong desire to break it. That's because of man's sin, you understand. In a righteous heart, the law doesn't stir up desires to break the law. But in the heart that's already in rebellion against God, you say, thou shalt not, and the law in the heart says, oh yeah, I will. And sometimes we'll sin in ways that would not have occurred to that person before, but now the law says don't, so I'm going to prove that I can. I will. Nobody's going to tell me what to do, kind of attitude. The Heidelberg Catechism says, what does the 10th commandment require of us? And the answer is that not even the slightest inclination of thought, contrary to any of God's commandments, shall ever rise in our hearts, but that at all times we shall hate sin with the whole heart and delight in righteousness. Did you hear that? Let me read that again. This is why I said on the broadcast yesterday that some commentators believe that the 10th commandment, thou shalt not covet, is actually a summary of all the other nine. And here's what the Heidelberg Catechism says in regard to the 10th commandment. What does the 10th commandment require of us? Answer, that not even the slightest inclination of thought contrary to any of God's commandments shall ever arise in our hearts, but that at all times we shall hate sin with our whole heart and delight in righteousness. So, what the 10th commandment does is point to sin in the heart. It's not that the other commandments didn't include that, but it wasn't quite so conspicuous. Thou shalt not steal, all right? As long as I don't actually take something, I haven't broken that one. Thou shalt not kill. Well, as long as I don't actually kill somebody, I haven't broken that one. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Well, as long as I don't actually commit adultery, I haven't broken that one. Thou shalt not covet. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. In other words, the desire in your heart. You shall not covet your neighbor's ox. In other words, the desire in your heart. You don't actually steal, but the thought occurs to you. And Jesus, in the Sermon on the Mount, as you know, commented on all of these. And he said, if you hate your neighbor, you hate your brother, you are guilty of murder. If you look upon a woman for the purpose of lusting after her, you have committed adultery already in your heart. You see, the 10th commandment shows us that sin is not simply in the outward deed, but it is also in the inward thought. Thou shalt not covet. And what this verse is telling us is that because hearts are sinful, that the very commandment, thou shalt not, often provokes people to sin. Oh, I didn't know that I shouldn't sin in this way. I shouldn't do this. I wouldn't call it sin. I shouldn't do this. Oh, you tell me I can't do that? I'll show you. And the law actually many times provokes sinful hearts to sin that otherwise they would not have committed. So what's the purpose of the law? Number one, to define sin. Number two, to provoke sin. And we'll have to talk more about that, Lord willing, on Monday. Join me then. Until then, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you His eternal peace.